Great. Well, thanks, Dare, for the nice introduction. I will attempt to keep us on time. I have till 3:30, right? That's a joke. I do have till 3:30. That's the break. So I'm between you and coffee. Okay. Dare called me quite a while ago and asked that I do this talk, and I said, sure, I'll do that. That sounds like a great idea. And then I started working on it. I'm like, why did I say yes to that? Well, partially, I owe Dare, so I had to say yes. But this turns out to be a fairly complicated challenge for us. You start thinking about, well, we need more fertility records. We need better estimates of genetic prediction measures for fertility or longevity traits. And I don't disagree with that. And I don't disagree, Dare, with your comment about genomics likely being a tool to help us get there. The challenge is a whole bunch of stuff in between. So I'm reminded of the Far Side cartoon that has, you know, some math over here and the hypothesis and a result over here. And the two scientists are standing at the blackboard and one of them's pointing to the middle that says a miracle happens right here, right? And that's a little bit what we're facing. So I hope by the end, if nothing else, we have a really clear perspective on some of the obstacles we need to overcome. And maybe some encouragement about some ways that we might think outside of our typical data collection routines to capture some meaningful reproductive data for our cow herds. So a little bit of overview where we're going today. We'll talk about some of the current evaluations. And I think this is one of the encouraging bits is that, you know, if I would have given this talk 10 years ago, the list of breeds and traits would have been much fewer. So we've made headway. I want to talk a little bit about what's in the phenotype, because that's an important discussion. Maybe a little a reality check here, why we've not made a lot of progress. Several things stood out to me as challenges. As we thought here at the end, we'll talk about maybe some opportunities. Okay. I want to sort of stage us by thinking again and reminding us, and I couldn't have asked for four better speakers in the session that I got to moderate for the Q&A that emphasized the importance of reproduction in the commercial sector. And there's no doubt that as we think about the idealness of a beef cow, that reproduction is central to that. But we know that it's influenced by lots of things, right? So nutrient environment, management, the bulls we turn out, all kinds of stuff influence that. But shouldn't dissuade us from the opportunities to make improvement, okay? So current evaluations that are available, I did sort of a web search here recently to sort of capture these, so if I missed your favorite breeds, I don't think I did, but hopefully this is a fairly comprehensive list. Angus has heifer pregnancy, Brangus age at first calving, heifer preg, and stayability. Gelpie has heifer preg, 30-month calving EPD and stayability, Hereford sustained cow fertility, Limousin, Red Angus both have stayability, Red Angus also has heifer preg, and then stayability for Shorthorn and Simmental. A number of these work multi-breed through IGS, so stayability ones in common in that evaluation. But a little bit of variety, but most folks have tried to work through what data they have available and use that to inform some kind of sentient selection tool. One of the problems that stands out is I don't have a problem using the data that we've got at hand, but what efforts might we make to capture new data or add to the information that flows into our genetic evaluation and record system is something we really need to think about. Okay. So one of the things that stood out, and I don't know if Mark Thalman's not in the room because he's next door chairing a session. Mark and I had a good chat yesterday afternoon about this, and it's really important that we get our head around what is the trait that we're after, okay? And what are the consequences of selection for that trait, okay? So having a really good perspective on what that is. Because when you say fertility, it's sort of like the discussion we've had a number of years ago about, well, what is efficiency? Well, there's all kinds of different measurements of efficiency, right? So we need to be very precise in what it is we're talking about, because these are all fertility or reproductively oriented sort of ideas, pregnancy rate at some given age, so heifer pregnancy or 30 months pregnancy rate. Pregnancy rate is a 5-year. We could make lots of traits here. Rebreeding at some particular age is kind of closely related to that. Fertility of some, we can define fertility a lot of ways. Cow longevity, so what kind of culling information was used to sort of clean up those records. If she was culled for reproductive failure, that tells us something about reproduction. Okay, if she was culled because she looked at us crosswise and ran over our kid, that's probably not reproductively related. Okay, but in some cases, like stayability, that culling for disposition is included in stayability, right? So we have to be really careful about what we include or don't include in terms of culling observations and censoring of data. An idea of days to calving, which I kind of like. I have a predilection to sort of favor these females that are born or calve early in the calving distribution, and so this is one that kind of helps us get to that without having to measure exact conception date. We kind of back into it by calving records. Postpartum intervals obviously closely related to that. So the point here is really we need to come to some consensus about what is the trait or traits that we want to measure. And then maybe more importantly is how might we incorporate those into a selection index architecture? Because at the end of the day, this is one suite of traits that's part of a whole set of traits that are under selection by our seed stock and commercial producers. And we ought to be able to economically weight those appropriately in the selection index to account for various cost or revenue structures that go with them. Okay, why haven't we made a lot of progress? Well, Mark, again, yesterday's conversation sort of helped crystallize this. And it's that conception is really the result of a whole series of variable or stochastic biological processes. Okay, it's you're pregnant or you're not. But it's dependent or conditioned on a whole bunch of things that happened before that, right? So did we turn out bad bulls? What was the nutrient environment those cows were running in? What was the body condition score of the cows at calving that influenced their energy balance going into the breeding season? Okay, so you can see the complexity of the things that affect that. So we have to kind of think through how we might structure the genetic evaluation to capture the meaningful parts of that information that might influence it, so variation that we might be able to describe in terms of some kind of contemporary group structure, say age or nutrient management of cows and so forth. But there's other things that may be harder to capture, like breeding system. Are we turning out purebred or hybrid bulls? So the influence of the male and their capacity to settle cows could have an influence here. So what bull cows get bred to? Any kind of the synchronization protocols have an influence, right? So they may either support or mask fertility or infertility of cows in the system, and we have to build our system to be robust against that. So I know this is everybody's kind of like, great, Weber, you sound really enthused about this, right? Because this is a pretty big hill to climb, okay? No doubt. It gets worse, okay? Good discussion this morning about the importance of cow longevity and sort of the dichotomy we see in seed stock production versus commercial production, right? One of the limiting factors for those of us in seed stock production is how many samples of genetics can we get in a fixed period of time, so we turn over generations to capture those, okay? That suggests that we have reduced longevity in cows as a function of our breeding system. Okay, in many cases, our seed stock herds don't provide enough information because we've structured it such that we dispose of or dispense of cows at a relatively young age. Okay, so they don't ever actually make in our herd one of these longevity kinds of records. That's a problem. Okay, we don't have that opportunity, and that's sort of the antithesis of what we want to have happen at the commercial level, right? Some good discussion this morning about the value of longevity and some maybe risk management in terms of depreciation that we ought to think about. But certainly the expectation is that cows last until we make one of those voluntary culling decisions. And so we've got a need to meet in terms of our customers' genetic improvement plans to make cows that last and not really a great way in our seed stock systems in many ways to capture them. I think about our production system at K-State, where we've got a pretty intensive embryo transfer and AI program. How do you build contemporary groups to represent that? Okay, they're nested, they're sequential. We've got cows that calved at different points in time, have different number of opportunities to participate in those various programs. I thought about it for quite a while, and then I quit because it's a mess. Okay, so we really have to think through this, and at the end, I'll make some suggestions that I think may help us do that. This is one of my, and if you've been to one of my extension programs, I use this picture a lot because it describes a lot about what we do and the influences in our system. And it's the famous Shorten Adams picture of the cow and the influence of energy or nutrient supply and body condition in beef cows. And I pointed out, just to represent here again, the influence ester cyclicity is central to what we do, okay? And it's the first thing that goes. Okay, so all the other environmental influences in terms of nutrient availability and body condition score, stage of production, all those things affect our ability to get enough energy into the cow to get her to cycle. We have to think about that in terms of the opportunity for us to measure a phenotype that actually means something. Okay, opportunities for the future. I think certainly we've made a lot of headway, you know, over the last 20 or 25 years, as we've moved either full or partial breed registries to either total herd reporting or whole herd reporting, whatever your favorite word is for that, but complete contemporary group data submission that is designed to capture both reproductive successes, so a birth record or weaning record of calves, reflective of that cow's performance, plus then some reproductive status code or disposal code for those cows as they move through the production cycle. Without those, the tools I showed you earlier would not be possible, okay? Certainly, capturing that information is really valuable, and we can extract information out of that, but central to improving it, certainly exposure data. So if we're in these natural service situations, we've got when bulls went in, when bulls come out, what bulls were in the cohort, available to settle those cows if they're multi-sire breeding pasture, and then certainly some information about breeding systems so we know that, in fact, they were either natural service or they were involved in some kind of AI program where we edit or censor those records out is really, really valuable. I think the challenge moving forward is, you know, Mark Allen gave a great talk this morning, lots of stuff in there about reproductive management in cows as an opportunity to improve genetic progress, but almost all of those interfered with some kind of data collection scheme. I was thinking as he was talking about, well, how would I try and capture cow fertility data out of that? I don't know. Okay, so we're sort of back to turning out bulls and monitoring which cows got settled is the best way, unless we do something, you know, on the order of you know, a massive synchronization and AI and monitor first service AI conception. That's certainly an opportunity and one that you know, other species potentially used as well. So there's opportunities to do more, but all of them require more data submission. Along that line is you know, capturing the records that we have available and interrogating them for useful information. So certainly calving records and disposal codes help us, or reproductive status codes, sort of make some assumptions about what was the reproductive status of that cow or her performance in the previous breeding season. And using that information sort of, again, infer this reproductive performance can be really useful. And you can feed that data into some kind of survival analysis. I know we've got a student at K-State working on some of this work. Mike McNeil's done some. The sustained cow fertility model at Hereford is similar to this, but really uses the data we've got available without jumping through lots of extra hoops. I think one of the other opportunities that exists for us is really as we think about collecting data from commercial herds, we have a tendency to think about growth and carcass and those sort of things. But what opportunities might there be for structured breeding systems to go back and gather information about pedigree Some of this may be driven by just genomic sampling of existing cow herds that have been using, say, I'm a seed stock breeder. I've been selling bulls to a particular breeder for a period of time. Using genomics to kind of rebuild that cow pedigree may be an opportunity to get information that is in the environment that we expect those bulls' daughters to perform in, right? So we have to do some work to make sure we get fair comparisons out of that in terms of being able to reliably assign contemporary group structures, which may be a challenge, but if we go into it on the front end and help build some of those relationships and data structures, might really help us. And it might help us in a way that, you know, I mentioned genotyping. Well, if we rebuild the pedigree, we've got the foundation for some additional genomic analysis to measure fertility and longevity kinds of traits and leverage the genomic information to make progress. A number of years ago, Dr. Van Eenen and I gave a talk about, you know, what are all the kinds of traits that benefit from genomics? Well, ones that are expensive to measure, ones that take a long time. So we could do intensive phenotypic collection, although it takes time, on a relatively small population and leverage that back over the herd or the breed structure, pedigree structure, could be very valuable to us. And one we should think about because, again, this trait's really important to us economically. We just haven't spent a lot of time trying to get much progress made in it. And the same could be said on the bull side. So what should we measure? I didn't want to leave without some opportunity to sort of give my two cents on what I think the traits ought to be. I mentioned in my conversation with Mark yesterday, his comment was, well, fertility and longevity and try and separate those, which I think is a challenge, but I get what he's saying. And that's that, you know, we can measure fertility as sort of a 0-1 or a binary response of conception in a known breeding season. We can do that across parities and use that information to sort of get at underlying fertility of those cows. Mark and I talked through the sort of the genetic evaluation structure that might be needed to do that. It is not simple, okay? It might be simple to Mark Thalman. It was not simple to Bob Weber, okay? How about that? The days to calving is one I kind of like, and this is actually used a fair bit in Southern Hemisphere, in Australia and other parts of the world, but relies on naturally exposed females and fundamentally captures differences in postpartum intervals and days to breeding from the beginning of the breeding season. So sort of benefits of a couple of aspects there. We like cows that conceive early in the breeding season and that do that every year. And so this kind of helps capture some of that. Longevity is another one, and Mark sort of argued, and I kind of agree with him, that this is sort of a separate trait than underlying fertility per se. It kind of speaks to, you know, a cow's ability to calve at a defined period for a sustained period of time. Some complexity in sort of evaluating the contemporary group structures required to do that, but I think a really useful kind of exercise to try and separate those to some degree. I wanted to give just a picture here of the sort of the underlying days to calving idea. And this is, I just copied this out of some Angus Australia or breed plan literature. So it's got some different words in it than what we usually use, joining. So this is a breeding pasture. So breeding details of all females naturally mated within the herd. So they code out ETs and AI services out of the data to clean it up. But what it really looks at is the date difference between these two calf birth dates with some assumption about a relatively fixed gestation period. And so the main variation then comes in this postpartum interval I said calving records. This is bull end, so this is breeding season start date to subsequent calf birth date. Okay. This period of time in between the start of the breeding season and when she actually conceived is kind of an unobserved variable, but we capture the variation since this is relatively constant by using this bull end date and then calf birth date as the phenotype to measure. And I think has some real utility. We do have to capture some information relative to, again, those that were removed from the herd or didn't have an opportunity to make this calf record subsequently, differences in breeding type, so AI and ETs, removed, and then details on calves born. So Even dead calves represent a conception event, okay? And so getting that data in and not penalizing for cows that had, you know, a dystocia event or something like that that disrupted the weaning performance of a calf. She still successfully conceived one and gestated it to that birth date. So with that, Dare, we even got time for questions because I'm pretty sure that's my last slide. I'm sure game for a spirited debate on this topic because I think it's one we really need to have. The opportunities for us to collect more data and think more thoroughly about it, I think this is a great venue to do stuff like that. And so either now or over the next day or so, if you've got an idea, don't keep it to yourself, okay? I'd be glad to chat about those. So, Dare, thank you again for the invite for what I found to be a challenging topic. So.
Before I open it to questions, I get the opportunity to ask a question. Sorry. It was what you were just on, so I wanted to hit it. The Australian days to calving, the issue I've always had with that one is the problem when one doesn't conceive. How do they handle that?
So what they do, my understanding, is they assign some arbitrarily long calving date. So they say, okay, if she didn't have one, instead of saying she was 425 days to calve or whatever, that would be not very good. They give her like 800 or something. I don't. Dr. Miller, do you know the exact number?
I think it's a full cycle, but that's how it's
420. Yep.
As I remember, it was like a cycle, one cycle.
One cycle.
So
okay.
It wasn't as big a penalty as my penalty.
Yeah. Yes, sir. All thrown out. Oh, sure. So the gentleman was saying they use the days to calving number, but since they use fixed time AI at the beginning of their breeding season, all their data gets booted out, and that's a real obstacle to this kind of stuff. Is, you know, we talk a lot about using the reproductive technologies to drive us ahead faster. Well, when we do that, it monkeys up our ability to participate in some of these analyses. That's a great point. Yes, Dr. Hogue?
I guess I'm going to disagree with you on having to put out fertility by itself. If you do a stayability through 6 years of age, the vast majority of it is going to be reproduction. And what is reproduction? Who cares that it's today? You know, it's kind of the bottom line.
It's largely reproduction, not entirely complete. Yep. And I don't fundamentally have a big beef with stayability. I wish it was a little cleaner, and I think we could actually make it cleaner by doing a better job using disposal code data to kind of clean that up. But, you know, I think stayability does a decent job.
All right. I just worked with the whole herd reporting on the guidelines.
Right.
And we came up with really good disposal codes.
I agree. I helped you.
So they will work if people use them. So I hope all the breeders will adopt them because most of the time goes into their advantage. One last thing.
That would be pretty difficult to do, I suspect. Times have changed. Yeah, good observations, Bob, and I agree. And your point is really good. Having worked recently with some disposal code data, if you're a seed stock breeder and you just check other for convenience, you're not really helping solve the problem, okay? So be precise in those disposal codes. I know sometimes it's a long list, and you go, well, I got to sort through this list, and you're in a hurry. But that disposal code stuff is meaningful, and it's important. So classify them correctly. Yep. Yes, sir, in the back. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's actually a pretty good point. And calving interval and days to calving are kind of closely related. A little bit different because they don't capture, and one of the reasons I like days to calving better is because it starts with that defined breeding season start date. So it has a tendency to favor those cows that do a better job getting settled early versus, I mean, a cow that has a calf at the end of the breeding season every year, okay, she's fertile or she's reproductively successful, but as a breeder, she's one more risk to me, right? Because if she calves the last day of the calving season, that means she's one of the last ones to get bred every year and has limited exposure opportunities in that defined breeding season. So she's a risk, okay? And if I sell all the calves at the same time, are her calves as valuable as the ones that were dropped at the beginning of the calving distribution? No, they're in fact a lot less valuable. So calving interval, I think, is a really important concept for us to think about, but I don't think captures everything that a days to calving number might catch that drives us to cows that reproduce the way we want them to reproduce. Does that make sense? Good point, though. Yep. Brian? Good question. I kind of waffle back and forth a little bit. I think there's data that suggests that those are distinctly different traits. And part of it's driven by age at puberty and the management of those females and their exposure as heifers that may be substantially different environment than we expect those cows to rebreed in as two-year-olds and three-year-olds. So I think they're best managed because of that as separate traits. In the genetic evaluation. So, and I
quick comment, whenever we came out with that, we were kind of disappointed they aren't genetically correlated, but not they're highly genetically correlated.
Right.
There's a big environmental one. But it is genetically correlated. It is really
Yeah. Good question. Yes, sir.
I question the employer if there was discussion about fire facilities, coal facilities. In my career, I've noticed tremendous difference between facility and commitment. Commitment is on the difference there. I'd use that as a focusing that idea.
It didn't matter, right? Yeah, yep. No, I agree. There's, I think, a lot of opportunity for genetic improvement, or at least data collection. I hesitate to even say genetic improvement because we don't know. There's some early data that says, yeah, those traits are heritable, at least the semen quality traits. Now, how heritable bull fertility as a trait, capacity to settle cows is? I don't know, maybe there's probably somebody in the room that does a lot of repro stuff that's more familiar with that literature on the beef or dairy side than I am. But there's opportunity for sure. Yep. And the cow's only half of the equation, right? Yep. Good.
Bob, I want you to comment if you would. We had a little bit of discussion in our meeting yesterday afternoon about, because we've got a lot of influencers in the room, the multiple breed associations and as Bob mentioned, it's not like the old days. It takes that pressure from breeders to get things done. If fertility is important, and I think it is, and a case for that was made yesterday, in that we're really making a move to decision support, selection indexes, things like that. If we all agree that reproduction is a vital economic component to success, and it's not a part of, or a very good value is not a part of that selection index, in some ways, we may be going the wrong direction on reproduction by using the indexes if we're pushing things that are going to challenge us environmentally.
Right.
So how much impact does that have? Can you comment on that?
Well, I think there's some good industry examples. I mean, if you go to, say, Simmental's API index, heavily influenced by stability. Okay? If that is not in there, then the rest of the traits fill up the void of the selection intensity and selection pressure that we apply. And your point is good that there's a number of those. We can think about cow weight and lactation potential and the correlation between those and growth traits and carcass traits to really move reproduction or make cows less fit for a certain production environment in terms of nutrient demand, which comes back around in terms of body condition score and influence on those cows' ability to reproduce. So we really can go the wrong direction pretty easily if we don't have good measures of some kind of longevity, fertility thing to keep those stuff in balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we don't know, right? And what we don't put in the index and weight, we don't have in the index and weight it. So yeah, having that in there is really important. Sort of back to the, if you want maternal traits, you actually have to select for them. Okay? They don't just magically show up. Yep, good point.
Any last questions?
Jack? Yeah, that's a good question, Jackie. And I think one of the things I thought about when I was thinking through this days to calving is, one, we could either, A, make the assumption they're all the same, which is a pretty big assumption, right? The other thing is, well, what opportunities are there to actually, I mean, several breeds calculate gestation length EPD, use that in some kind of bivariate analysis to adjust those expectations of how long it was based on that cow's genetic merit for gestation length. So, and the bulls that they were potentially mated to. So you could, I think you could help correct that. The other thing though to think about is, okay, we have an individual cow that makes a record, but we're not always just interested in that cow. We're interested in the sire she's out of. So that's going to kind of get averaged out a little bit over the progeny group. So, yep, good question. Is there another one? Oh, Sean. Yep.
Yeah, I just, one of the things I normally use earlier pregnancy is related to stability analysis. But I think it was just as obvious to form that order and really work on it. So, what is work chemistry? I think we'll take a number of lessons by the size of the cow to confirm what the exposure is.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. I know there's a number of attempts to do that in data. So I know Dorian Garrick for a while did some work on indexing a set of stability analyses that were, did she calve at 3 given 2, did she calve at 4 given 3, and putting those together to make a stability that leverages that earlier calving information to sort of prognosticate about what the subsequent stability EPD is. And there's been more work on that sort of approach, which I think is really important because there's no sense waiting until the bull's 8 years old to figure out that, well, his 3-year-olds didn't rebreed because that was 4 years ago, right? So using that earlier calving information as an indicator in the analysis is important. Gelby actually has a 30-month rebreeding one that sort of helps get at that. I remember when I was did I see Schiefelbein in here? I remember at Gelby we spent a lot of time going through disposal code records and looking at, you know, where the failure points are, and it's exactly getting wet 2-year-olds and wet 3-year-olds rebreds is the challenge for most of us. So why not use that information early on to influence our view of reproductive performance? Yep, great point. Good.
One more. Promise.
Dr. Patterson.
Only because it's Dr. Patterson.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dave. That could be pretty influential in a heifer pregnancy type EPD, yep, as an indicator trait data. Yep. Yep. Yeah, I kind of like the first service AI conception rate as a better, or something that gets some reflection of, okay, you had an opportunity, did you take it or not? Yep. Versus I gave you 8 opportunities or 6 or whatever it was in the breeding season. So that'll be a really long one, by the way. Yep. Good points, Dave. Thank you.